Hello, and welcome to Line Noise, the Electronic Frontier Foundation's podcast. I am Tim Jones, EFF's Activism and Technology Coordinator. Today is April 9th, 2009. That means it's been almost a year since our last podcast. We do want to try to do these a little more frequently, so we're going to try to change up the format to keep it interesting for you and try to make it quicker for us to record them. Each episode, we're going to pick two or three of the most interesting and important topics and current events in the worlds of technology and civil liberties, and we're going to have a quick conversation about each of those things. So, this week, we're going to talk with Richard S. Guerra, our activism coordinator, about a chance to reform one of the worst parts of the Patriot Act. Second, we'll talk with Danny O'Brien, our international outreach coordinator, about these so-called three strikes laws that the motion picture industry and the music industry are trying to push on governments around the world. And finally, we'll talk with Kevin Bankston, one of the lead attorneys in our warrantless wiretapping projects, about the motion filed by the Obama Department of Justice on Friday. But first, let's play the theme song.
The Line Noise Podcast. Electronic Frontier Foundation. The Line Noise Podcast. Electronic Frontier Foundation.
So first, I'm going to talk with Richard S. Guerra, EFF's activism coordinator, about a new opportunity to, hopeful opportunity to reform the Patriot Act. How's it going, Richard?
It's going right. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
The Patriot Act, elements of the Patriot Act are up for reauthorization, and I know it's prompted a lot of Congress folk to reconsider some of the worst things that were authorized by the Patriot Act. And one of those is this thing called national security letters. I guess we should start just by explaining what they are. I'm sure some listeners are already familiar, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. But what's the broad outline of what a national security letter is?
Sure. Well, so a national security letter is basically, can be kind of described like a secret subpoena. So the FBI can issue this letter. They're usually targeting someone like an ISP or possibly a credit card company. And when they issue the letter, they ask for a bunch of personal information about a certain person served by that ISP or by that credit card company. And the tricky part of it is that that compels that organization to confer that personal information about someone. But it also includes a gag order. So that credit card company or ISP can't talk about the fact that they received this national security letter. So the person on the other end, or the person that's being targeted, or the person that's who has their information being exposed, that person doesn't really get a chance to know that they're being investigated this way by the government.
It's so creepy, and there's also, as I understand it, no judicial review, no warrant involved, no independent oversight. It's sort of whenever some official in the FBI makes the decision that they need this financial records about you, or they need these internet traffic records of what websites you've been going to, what your web searches have been. It's just that one call made in the FBI. There's really no check on it, and in a lot of ways, the letters seem designed to avoid that kind of oversight because you can't talk about them.
Yeah, completely. It is really creepy. It is super eerie. Last year, there was a report from the Justice Department's Inspector General. And in that report, he disclosed that apparently 60% of the nearly 50,000 national security letters issued, they targeted ordinary Americans. And so that's why it was really ripe for abuse. And, you know, even here at EFF, we were sort of on the receiving end of an NSL.
Right, I remember that with archive.org, the Internet Archive. Listeners probably know it as the home of the Wayback Machine. Received an NSL, and EFF was involved because just by coincidence, we are attorneys for archive.org.
Yeah, exactly right. And so they responded to the NSL in a particularly bold way. They decided to give only publicly available information and then challenged the lawfulness of the NSL. And in that case, we actually won. They rescinded, or the FBI was forced to rescind the NSL. And then we were able to talk about it, which is perfect because this is the kind of abuse that would happen kind of quietly because of the gag order part of it. And so we were really able to, I think, make a change there.
So I understand that Congress is now... There was an attempt last year, but it fell short, and now Congress is maybe looking at taking steps again to fix the problem.
Yeah, so there's I think, a good chance with this bill, I mean, for a couple of reasons. I mean, one is the Patriot Act is going to, or provisions of the Patriot Act are going to expire, so this is the right time to issue these reforms. Also, this bill was introduced before, so people are sort of familiar with it, and it's been reintroduced by Nadler and Flake, and it has 18 co-sponsors. So it has pretty healthy support.
That's promising, bipartisan
support too. So
I mean, is there a real bipartisan consensus that this needs to change, or do we expect the bill's going to have real opposition?
No, I don't think so. I mean, everyone knows that this needs to get patched up, and everyone's seen enough problems with it. So I think this bill has a good chance this year.
That's great. That's great to hear. Is this something that that EFF members and folks listening to the podcast could be helping out with?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's an action alert posted to EFF.org/action. If they head to that website, they'll be able to send their representative a message asking them to support the bill.
That's great. And hopefully the more force behind this bill when it passes, the more likely we are to be able to push through other needed reforms. And certainly with you know, some of the recent actions the Obama administration will be talking about later in the podcast, it seems like a full, wholehearted reform of the Patriot Act like we'd like to see is far from a certain thing. So the more that people can, you know, let the people actually making these decisions in Congress know that it's something that is important, the better everything's going to be.
Yeah, totally agree.
Any final thoughts?
No, just please go and take that action. We really need people to show support for this.
Right on. Thanks for talking with me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now I'm going to talk with Danny O'Brien, EFF's International Outreach Coordinator, is that it?
That is my official title.
How's it going?
It's going good. It's going very well at the moment.
So you you can tell Danny's our international coordinator because he's got the international accent happening.
That's right.
Did that take long to cultivate? Because I know you've got to have that accent to talk with people outside.
It took about
of this
4 years, very early on in my life, to cultivate this accent.
So we're going to talk about this so-called three strikes measures
right.
that we're seeing pop up in a lot of countries around the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that they take a lot of different sort of forms, but the general idea is if you're accused of internet copyright infringement or file sharing or something to that effect three times or some number of times, you are banned from the internet by your country's government. Is that the general shape
of it? That's pretty much it. The key shift here is it's the recording industry trying to do that old internet trick of taking out the middleman. But unfortunately, in this case, the middleman is a judge.
What do you mean, taking out the middleman?
Well, so up until now, the recording industry has generally gone after either technologists or individuals, or in recent cases, internet service providers themselves, in order to try and cut back infringement. And they've been using the laws that already exist to do that. The trouble with that, from their point of view, is it's very costly. They have to gather up a lot of evidence, and it doesn't make them very popular. So the idea of three strikes is to try and remove this problematical going through, gathering evidence, actually going to a court of law process. The idea is that they should just be able to submit the evidence that they gathered to an ISP, and then purely on the suspicion of having infringed, that ISP becomes a sort of judge, jury, and executioner. It'll either send a letter or restrict in some way its own users, or finally throw them off the internet. And that's all without any judicial oversight at all.
Whoa.
Yes, whoa is a good way of looking at it. The other part of it, though, is it hasn't actually been very successful. Three strikes has been kicking around now for an incredibly long time. I think the first we heard of it was really at the beginning of the RIAA's initiatives in sort of 2001, 2002.
Oh, that is a long time.
Yeah, you know, it's not new. This international push, this concerted effort, is now, I guess, about 2 years old, and it's had very little take up. A lot of countries have almost come to doing it, And then pull back when they realized kind of how ridiculous it is and how unpopular it is.
Sure, sure.
The one exception to this is France. France was the first country to take three strikes seriously. They came up with this proposal, very early on in the Sarkozy administration, and they've continued with that. It's taken a long time, but it looks like they're actually going to try and push this through in the next week or so. They're also, and this is the reason why three strikes hasn't got as far as perhaps. The music industry thought it would, is that when you sit down to write a law, you actually have to think through the consequences. And so one of the consequences is, well, what if you have an open Wi-Fi node? What if you run a cyber cafe? And what if you run a business and somebody file shares three times, is accused of being an infringer? Does that mean that business is thrown offline? Does that mean that cyber cafe has to close down? Do you have to lock down your internet?
Right, which is exactly the kind of problems we've seen with the lawsuit strategy here in the States. So
right,
there's
right.
No reason to think it wouldn't happen with this other method.
Right, and so the French law, takes this to its logical extremes. It says that individuals are now liable for the security of their internet connections.
Oh, gosh.
So it effectively stops open Wi-Fi nodes unless you lock them down in lots of strange ways.
So it sounds like this is it's not a sure thing that this won't pass. It sounds like the only thing, stop me if I'm misstating this, but the only thing between France and banning open Wi-Fi and keeping a national registry of copy criminals is this one final legislative body that is usually kind of a rubber stamp. Is that accurate, or...?
Well, what's, again, interesting is that, for instance, in New Zealand actually passed the law. After that law had been passed, the protests were so huge and the consequences were spelled out so carefully that the New Zealand government eventually went, well, look, we're just not going to enforce this law.
Huh.
Right? So I think even if the Constitutional Court accepts this, there's the very fact that, it's just going to be really hard to enforce...
So it sounds like there's nothing to worry about.
Wish that was the truth.
Three strikes efforts are doomed. We should, just sit back and watch the show. And
one of the problems is that even bad unenforceable laws, as we've seen with parts of the DMCA, can have these terrible consequences.
Yeah.
And it's also really important to support other countries in this effort. The US doesn't have a three strikes provision, but as I'm sure anybody reading the tech blogs and tech news sites know, there's an incredible amount of pressure in the US too. And that's true in any country. So every country that manages to fight off three strikes is helping every other country prevent this.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot for talking with me, Danny.
Great. Thanks very much, Tim.
So I recorded that interview yesterday, Wednesday, April 8th, just to show you how fast the situation's moving. Only a few hours after Danny and I talked, the French Socialist Party actually defeated the three strikes law in this jujitsu unexpected parliamentary maneuver. Now, that doesn't mean the French law is dead. The Sarkozy administration is almost certainly going to try to arrange a new vote sometime in the next few weeks. So the situation's very much on the move. And hopefully I can post this podcast before things change too much again. So stay tuned. Now I'm going to talk with Kevin Bankston, senior staff attorney here at the EFF, and one of the lead attorneys on our warrantless wiretapping projects. How's it going, Kevin?
It's going great, Tim.
So listeners presumably know about Hepting v. AT&T, which is our case against the telecommunications companies for their assistance with the government's warrantless wiretapping program. They may not know about Juul, which is our litigation against the government itself for that wiretapping program. Could you talk a little bit about why we filed Juul in the first place and what the developments have been this week?
Well, many folks who follow our cases might recall that when the Justice Department and the White House were pressing on Capitol Hill for an immunity for phone companies like AT&T that were being sued for helping the NSA's warrantless wiretapping, while they were making that case, one of their big arguments was, well, don't worry if we immunize the phone companies. You can always still sue the government.
Hmm.
Well, it turns out they were just kidding, or to be less charitable, misleading. Because we took them up on their offer And after the immunity passed, we brought a new lawsuit in addition to our lawsuit against AT&T, directly against the government and its agencies and officers for the NSA's warrantless dragnet illegal spying program. That case is Juul v. NSA. And this past Friday, the government filed its response to our complaint in that case, arguing that the case should be dismissed.
So I understand there were two arguments in the motion that we saw on Friday that were pretty troubling. The first was this claim to state secrets, which is pretty nonsensical, and which we've seen before from the Bush administration, but which was pretty disappointing to see from the Obama administration. Could you talk about the state secrets claims and what the story is with those?
The Bush administration argued in our case, AT&T v. Hepting v. AT&T, and in a number of other NSA-related cases, that no court could ever judge the legality of the NSA spying, because to do so would require the government to disclose so-called state secrets, which would harm national security. Now, I think that anyone who thinks that the NSA's program and the cooperation of the phone companies is still a state secret hasn't read a newspaper in the past 3 years.
So even though evidence of this program has been in the newspapers for years, they're saying it's still so secret that we can't even show it to judges in a secret locked room.
It's, absolutely.
So it's more or less a ploy to dismiss the case without actually allowing them to consider the evidence?
Certainly the goal is to get the case dismissed without the court even being able to consider the evidence. But the Obama administration has now gone even further than the Bush administration did in trying to cover up the NSA program and kill these cases by arguing not only this state secrets argument, but also arguing that the Patriot Act made it impossible to sue the government for violations of federal surveillance statutes. Huh. This is an incredibly shocking and broad argument that basically, although we as Americans have a statutory right not to be spied on without warrants, we don't actually have any right to go to court to enforce those laws, and that although the Obama administration came into office promising new accountability and transparency, apparently when it comes to NSA spying, no one should be held accountable for violating the privacy rights of millions of Americans.
It's so disappointing because it seems like a real retread of the arguments we saw in the telecommunications cases, where they're not even trying to defend themselves based on saying, well, we didn't break any laws. They're just saying, even if we did, it's okay because the Patriot Act gives us the right.
Exactly. Essentially, they're saying that even if we did everything the plaintiffs say we did, and we violated the law and the privacy rights of millions of ordinary Americans, it doesn't matter.
So what do you think the next steps are?
Well, the next step for EFF is simply to continue the litigation process. They've filed their brief asking for the case to be dismissed. We're going to file a brief opposing that motion, and we're going to argue it in front of Judge Walker here in San Francisco sometime in June, most likely.
Great. Thanks a lot for taking time to talk with me.
It's my pleasure.
Hey, if you like what you heard, or you'd like to hear more about something, or less of something, or you really have any feedback or all about this, send us an email, linenoise@eff.org. It would be great to hear from you. I'm Tim Jones. You heard from Richard Esguerra, Danny O'Brien, and Kevin Bankston. Signing off till next time. Thanks for listening.
The Line Noise Podcast. Electronic Frontier Foundation. The Line Noise Podcast. Electronic Frontier Foundation.